Who's my flack? He's in my flatmates in Greece on holiday. That was me snookered. I could have just went home and forced the door, but the state I was in, I just couldn't think straight. I would probably have got arrested for breaking into my own flat. Fortunately, I met Diane, who was kind enough to let me sleep on the couch. You're her flatmate, right? Oh, well, in a way, she laughed strangely as he struggled to find out the score. Something was not right. The man came and joined them. He nodded curtly at Renton, who smiled weakly back. "This is Mark," the woman told him. "All right," the guy said non-committally. Renton thought that they looked about his age, perhaps a bit older, but he was hopeless with ages. Diane was obviously a bit younger than the lot of them. Perhaps he allowed himself to speculate they had some perverse parental feelings for her. He had noted that with older people. They often tried to control younger, more popular and vivacious people, usually due to the fact that they are jealous of the qualities the younger people have and they lack. These inadequacies are disguised with a benign, protective attitude. He could sense this in them, and felt a growing hostility towards them. Then Renton was hit by a wave of shock, which threatened to knock him incoherent. A girl came into the room. As he watched her, a coldness came over him. She was the double of Diane, but this girl looked barely secondary school age. It took him a few seconds to realize that it was Diane. Renton instantly knew why women, when referring to the removal of their makeup, often say that they are taking their faces off. Diane seemed about 10 years old. She saw the shock on his face. He looked at the other couple. Their attitude to Diane was parental precisely because they were her parents. Even through his anxiety, Renton still felt such a fool for not seeing it sooner. Diane was so much like her mother. They sat down to breakfast, with a bemused Renton being gently cross-examined by Diane's parents. "So, what is it you do, Mark?" the mother asked him. What he did, at least work-wise, was nothing. He was in a syndicate which operated a gyro-fraud system, and he claimed benefit at 5 different addresses, 1 each in Edinburgh, Livingston and Glasgow, and 2 in London, at Shepherd's Bush and Hackney. Defrauding the government in such a way always made Renton feel virtuous, and it was difficult to remain discreet about his achievements. He knew he had to, though, as sanctimonious, self-righteous, nosy bastards were everywhere, just waiting to tip off the authorities. Renton felt that he deserved this money, as the management skills employed to maintain such a state of affairs were fairly extensive, especially for someone struggling to control a heroin habit. He had to sign on in different parts of the country, liaise with others in the syndicate at the gyro drop addresses, hitch down at short notice to interviews in London on a phone tip-off from Tony, Caroline or Nixie. His Shepherd's Bush gyro was in doubt now because he had declined the exciting career opportunity to work in the Burger King in Notting Hill Gate. "I'm a curator at the museum section of the District Council's Recreation Department. I work with the Social History Collection based mainly at the People's Story in the High Street," Renton lied, delving into his portfolio of bogus employment identities. They looked impressed, if slightly baffled, which was just the reaction he'd hoped for. Encouraged, he attempted to score further brownie points by projecting himself as the modest type, who didn't take himself seriously, and self-deprecatingly added, "I rake around in people's rubbish for things that have been discarded and present them as authentic historical artefacts who work in people's everyday lives. Then I make sure that they didn't fall apart when their own exhibition." "You need brains for that," the father said, addressing Renton but looking at Diane. Renton couldn't make eye contact with the daughter. He was aware that such avoidance was more likely to arouse suspicion than anything else, but he just couldn't look at her. "I wouldn't say that," Renton shrugged. "No, but qualifications, though. Aye, well, I've got a degree in history from Aberdeen University. This, in fact, was almost true. He'd got into Aberdeen University and found the course easy, but was forced to leave midway through the first year after blowing his grant money on drugs and prostitutes. It seemed to him that he thus became the first ever student in the history of Aberdeen University to fuck a non-student. He reflected that you were better making history than studying it. "Education's important. That's what we're always telling this one here," said the father, again taking the opportunity to make a point to Diane. Renton didn't like his attitude, and liked himself even less for this tacit collusion with it. He felt like a pervert uncle of Diane's. It was just as he was consciously thinking, "Please let her be sitting her hires," that Diane's mother smashed that prospect of damage limitation. "Diane's sitting her O-grade history next year," she smiled. "And French, English, art, maths, and arithmetic," she continued proudly. Renton cringed inside for the umpteenth time. "Mark's not interested in that," Diane said, trying to sound superior and mature, patronizing to her parents, the way kids deprived of power who become the subject of a conversation do. The way, Renton shakily reflected, that he did often enough, when his old man and old dog got started. The problem was, Diane just sounded so surly, so like a child, she achieved the opposite effect of the one she was aiming for. Renton's mind was working overtime. "Stoteleybaw, they call it. You can get put away for it. Too right you can, with the key flung away, branded a sex criminal. Get my face split open and socked in on a daily basis. Sex criminal, child rapist, nonce, short eyes." He could hear the psycho lags now. Cunts, he reflected like Begbie. "I heard that the wee lassie was just six. They tell me it was rape. Could have been your bairn or mine. Fuck me," he thought, shuddering. The bacon he was eating disgusted him. He'd been a vegetarian for years. This was nothing to do with politics or morality. He just hated the taste of meat. He said nothing, though. So keen was he to keep in the good books of Diane's parents. He drew the line at touching the sausage, however, as he reckoned that these things were loaded with poison. Thinking of all the junk he had done, he sardonically reflected to himself, "You have to watch what you put into your body." He wondered whether Diane would like it, and started sniggering uncontrollably through nerves at his own hideous double entendre. Feebly, he attempted to cover up by shaking his head and telling a tale, or rather, retelling it. "God, what an idiot I am. I was in some state last night. I'm not really used to alcohol. Still, I suppose you're only 22 once in a lifetime." Diane's parents looked as unconvinced as Renton by the last remark. He was 25, going on 40. Nonetheless, they listened politely. "I lost my jacket and keys, like I was saying. Thank God for Diane and you folks. It's really hospitable of you to let me stay the night and to make such a nice breakfast for me this morning. I feel really bad about not finishing this sausage. It's just I'm so full. I'm no used to big breakfasts." "Too thin, that's your trouble," the mother said.
"That's what comes living in flats. East is east, west is west, but home is best," the father said.
There was a nervous silence at this moronic comment. Embarrassed, he added,
"That's what they say, anyway."
He then took the opportunity to change the subject.
"How are you going to get into the flat?"
Such people really scared the fuck out of Renton. They looked at him as if they hadn't done anything illegal in their lives. No wonder Diane was like the way she was, picking up strange guys in bars. This couple looked so obscenely wholesome to him. The father had slightly thinning hair, there were faint crow's feet at the mother's eyes, but he realized that any onlooker would put them in the same age bracket as him, only describing them as healthier.
"I'll just have to force the door, it's only a Yale. Silly, really, I've been meaning to get a mortise for ages. Good thing I didn't now. There's an entry phone in the stair, but the people next door will let me in." I could help you out there. I'm a joiner. Where do you live? The father asked. Renton was a little fazed, but happy that they had bought his bullshit. It's no problem. I was a chippy myself before I went to the uni. Thanks for the offer, though. This again was true. It felt strange telling the truth. He'd got so comfortable with deception. It made him feel real and, consequently, vulnerable. I was an apprentice at Gilsland's in Gorgie, he added, prompted by the father's raised eyebrows. I ken Ralphie Gilsland. Miserable sod, the father snorted. His voice more natural now. They had established a point of contact. One of the reasons I'm no longer in the trade. Renton went cold as he felt Diane's leg rubbing against his under the table. He swallowed hard on his tea. Well, I must be making a move. Thanks again. Hold on. I'll just get ready and chum you into town. Diane was up and out of the room before he could protest. Renton made half-hearted attempts to help tidy up before the father ushered him onto the couch and the mother busied herself in the kitchen. His heart sank, expecting the "I'm wide for your game, cunt" line when they were alone. Not a bit of it, though. They talked about Ralphie Gilsland and his brother Colin, who Renton found himself pleased to hear had committed suicide, and other guys they both knew from jobs. They talked football, and the father turned out to be a Hearts fan. Renton followed Hibs, who hadn't enjoyed their best season against their local rivals. They hadn't enjoyed their best season against anybody, and the father wasted no time in reminding him of it.
The Hibbies didn't do too well against us, did they?
Renton smiled, glad for the first time, for reasons other than sexual ones, to have shagged this man's daughter. It was amazing, he decided, how things like sex and Hibs, which were nothing to him when he was on smack, suddenly became all-important. He speculated that his drug problems might be related to Hibs' poor performances over the 80s. Diane was ready. With less makeup on than last night, she looked about 16, 2 years older than she was. As they hit the streets, Renton felt relieved to be leaving the house, but a little embarrassed in case anyone he knew saw them. He had a few acquaintances in the area, mainly users and dealers. They would, he thought, think that he'd gone in for pimping if they came across him now. They took the train from South Gyle into Haymarket. Diane held Renton's hand on the journey and talked incessantly. She was relieved to be liberated from the inhibiting influence of her parents. She wanted to check Renton out in more detail. He could be a source of blow. Renton thought about last night and wondered chillingly what Diane had done and with whom to gain such sexual experience, such confidence. He felt 55 instead of 25, and he was sure that people were looking at them. Renton looked scruffy, sweaty and bleary in last night's clothes. Diane was wearing black leggings, the type so thin that they almost looked like tights, with a white miniskirt over them. Either of the garments, Renton considered, would have sufficed on its own. One guy was looking at her in Haymarket Station as she waited for Renton to buy a Scotsman and a Daily Record. He noticed this, and strangely enraged, he found himself aggressively staring the guy down. Perhaps, he thought, it was self-loathing projected. They went into a record shop on Delray Road and thumbed through some album sleeves. Renton was now pretty jumpy, as his hangover was growing at a rapid rate. Diane kept handing him record sleeves for examination, announcing that this one was brilliant and that one superb. He thought that most of them were crap, but was too nervy to argue.
"All right, Rents, how's my man?"
A hand hit his shoulder. He felt his skeleton and central nervous system briefly rip out of his skin, like wire through plasticine, then jump back in. He turned to see Deke Swan, Johnny Swan's brother.
"No bad, Deke. How you livin'?"
he responded with an affected casualness which belied his racing heartbeat.
"No si bad, boss, no si bad."
Deke noted that Renton had company and gave him a knowing leer.
"I've got to Nash, like, see you around. Tell Sick Boy to gi' us a bell if you see him. The bastard owes us 20 fucking bar." You and me both, mate.
His patter's pure abysmal. Anyway, see you, Mark, he said, turning to Diane.
See you, doll. Your man here's too rude to introduce us. Must be love. Watch this, punter.
They smiled uneasily at this first external definition of them as Deke departed. Renton realized that he had to be alone. His hangover was growing brutal, and he just couldn't handle this.
Look, Diane, I've got to Nash. Meeting some mates down in Leith, the football and that.
Diane raised her eyes in knowing, weary acknowledgement, accompanying this gesture with what Renton thought were some strange clucking noises. She was annoyed that he was going before she could ask him about hash.
What's your address?
She produced a pen and a piece of paper from her bag. Know the Forrester Park one, she added, smiling. Renton wrote down his real address in Montgomery Street, simply because he was too out of it to think up a false one. As she departed, he felt a powerful twinge of self-loathing. He was unsure as to whether it came from having had sex with her or the knowledge that he couldn't possibly again. However, that evening he heard the bell go. He was skint, so he was staying in this Saturday night, watching Braddock Missing in Action 3 on video. He opened the door, and Diane stood before him. Made up, she was restored in his eyes to the same state of desirability as the previous evening. "Morning," he said, wondering how easily he'd be able to adjust to a prison regime. Diane thought she could smell hash. She really hoped so. Chapter 18. Strolling Through the Meadows.
The pub's like see dead busy, full of locals and festival types, having a wee snort before heading off to the next show. Some of these shows look okay. A bit heavy on the Irish, though, like say. Begbie's pished his jeans. Pished your kecks, Franco, Rents asked him, pointing at a wet patch on the faded blue denim.
Like fuck I have, it's just fucking water. Washing my fucking hands. Know that you'd fucking ken about that, you rented cunt. This cunt's allergic to water, especially if you mix it with fucking soap.
Sick boy's scanning the bar for women. Chick crazy, that kid. It's like he gets bored in the company of punters after a while. Maybe that's why sick boy's good with women. Like, maybe cause he has to be. Yeah, that could be it. Matty's talking quietly to himself, shaking his head. There's like he's something wrong with Matty. No, just smack. It's Matty's mind. It's like a bad depression, likes.
Renton and Begbie are arguing. Rents had better watch what he's doing, like, see. That Begbie man, it's like, see, that's a fucking jungle cat. We're just ordinary, funky feline types. Domestic cats, like, see. They cunts have got a fucking poppy. You're the cunt that's always fucking gone on about killing the rich and all that anarchy shite. Now you want to fucking shite out? Begbie sneers at Rents. And it's like very ugly and all. They dark eyebrows on topy, they darker eyes, that thick black hair, slightly longer than a skinhead. It's no a question he's shiting out, Franco. I'm just no into it. We're having a barry crack here. We've got the speed in the E. Let's just enjoy ourselves. Maybe go to a rave club, instead of wandering about the fucking meadows all night. They've got a big fucking theatre tent there, and a fucking fun fair up. It'll be crawling with police. There's too much fucking hassle, man.
I'm no going to any fucking rave clubs. You says yourself that they're for fucking bairns.
Aye, but that was before I went to yin.
Well, I'm no fucking going to yin. So let's fucking pub crawl well and get some cunt in the fucking bogs.
Nah, I can't be arsed. Fucking shiting cunt. You're still fucking shiting your cakes about the other weekend in the Bull and Bush.
No, I'm no. It was just unnecessary, that's all. The whole fucking thing.
Begbie looked at Rents and likes, really tensed up in his seat. He's straining forward, and I thought the dude was gonna gub the rent boy like he can.
Eh? Eh? How fucking unnecessary, you raj cunt!
Come on, Franco, take it easy, man, sick boy says.
Begbie seems to realise that he's over the top, like say, even for him.
Keep these claws in, Catboy. Show the world some soft pads. This is a bad cat. A big, bad panther.
We're filling some fucking Sherman tank. Where's he to you? The smart cunt deserved everything he got. Besides, I didn't see you fucking looking the other way when we were in the fucking snug at the barley divvying up the fucking loot.
The guy ended up unconscious in the hospital. He lost a lot of fucking blood. It was in the news.
The cunt's all right now, though. It fucking says, nae fucking harm done to nae cunt. And even if there was, so fuck. Some fucking rich American cunt, we shouldn't even fucking be here in the first place. Who gives a fuck about that cunt? You cunt, you've chibbed some cunt before, Eck Wilson at the school, so didn't you fucking start going all fucking squeamish?
That sort of shuts Rents up, cause he likes, he hates talking about that, but it sort of happened, Ken. That was just lashing out at some cat that was scratching you like, no likes he planning to do some rajawar. Beggars likes he can't see the difference, but... It was bad, though. Really sick, like, see. The yank, the boy likes, just wouldn't hand over the wallet, even when Begbie pulled the chib, like, see. The last words I heard the dude say was, "You won't use that." Begbie went fucking crazy. Got that carried away, like, see, with a blade work, Ken. We nearly forgot the wallet, likes. I got into the guy's pockets and fished it out, while Begbie was booting him in the face. Blood was flowing into the latrine, mixing with a pish. Ugly, ugly, ugly man, likes he can. I still shake thinking about it. I lie in bed and likes shudder. Every time I see a punter, likes he, we looks like our cat boy, Richard Hauser of Des Moines, Iowa, USA, a freeze. Whenever I hear a yank voice in the tune, I jump. Violence is fucking ugly, man. The beggar, dear old Franco, he raped us, like, see, raped us all that night, sort of shafted us up our asses and pied us off, like we were whores, man, Ken likes. Bad cat beggar, a wild, wild cat.
Who's coming, Spud?
Begbie's talking to us, he's biting his bottom lip.
Like, see, violence and that isn't really my sort of gig. I'll just stay and get bombed. Likes he can. Another shiting cunt, he turns away from me. No disappointed, like he sort of expects nothing for us in this kind of gig, likes he. Which is maybe good and maybe no see good. But who really cares the score about anything these days, likes he?
Sick boy says something about being a lover, no a fighter, and Begbie's about to say something when Matty goes, "I'm game." This diverts Begbie's attention for sick boy. The beggar boy then starts to praise Matty likes and calls us all the shiting cunts under the sun. But it's like to me that Matty's the shiting cunt, likes he, cause he's the groover that goes along with everything Franco says. I've never really liked Matty. One fucked up punter. Mates take the piss out of each other, likes. But when Matty slags you, it's like, see, you can feel more than that. You can feel, like, see, hate, Ken. Just being happy. That's a crime when Matty's about. You can't bear to see a gadge happy, like, see. I realise that I never see Matty on his own, like, see. It's like, see, sometimes just me and Rents, or just me and Tommy, or just me and Rab, or just me and Sick Boy, or even just me and Generalissimo Franco. But never just me and Matty. That sort of says something, like, see.
These bad cats leave the basket to stalk their prey, and the atmosphere is like... brilliant! Sick boy brings out some E. White doves, I think. It's mental gear. Most ecstasy hasn't any MDMA in it. It's just like you can, part speed, part acid in its effects. But the gear I've had is always just like see good speed, Ken. This gear is pure freaky, though. Pure Zappa-esque, man. That's the word. Zappa-esque. I'm thinking about Frank Zappa with Joe's Garage and Yellow Snow and Jewish princesses and Catholic girls, and I think that it would be really great to have a woman to love, Lexi. No shagging, likes. Well, no, just shagging. But to love, because I sort of feel like loving everybody, but no sort of with sex. Just having somebody to love. But like see Rent's got that Hazel and Sick Boy. Well, Sick Boy's got tons of birds. But these cat persons don't seem any happier than moi. The other man's grass is always greener. The sun shines brighter on the other side. I'm fucking singing like see, I never sing. I've got some gear and I'm singing. I'm thinking about Frank Zappa's daughter, Moonlightsy. She dares fine. Hanging out with her old man in the recording studio. Just to see, like, say, the creative process, Ken, the creative process. This is fucking mad. Go to move or I'll get gouchy. Sick boy's got his hands in his head. Rent and shirt's unbuttoned and he's sort of tweaking his nipples, like, say. Spud. Look at my nipples. They feel fucking weird, man. Nae cunt's got nipples like mine. I'm talking to him about love, and Rent says that love doesn't exist. It's like religion, and like, see, the state wants you to believe in that kind of crap so they can control you and fuck your head up. Some cats can't enjoy themselves without bringing in politics, Ken. But he doesn't bring us down. Because it's like say he doesn't believe it himself. Because we laugh at everything in sight. The mad guy at the bar with the burst blood vessels in his cootin. The snobby English festival type lemon. Well, he looks like somebody's just farted under her nose. Sick boy says, let's hit the meadows and take the fucking piss out of Begbie and Matty. Straight, boring, draft-back, schemy cunts. Risky, cat boy, risky. He's pure Raj, like see, I says. Let's do it for the fans, Rent says. Him and Sick Boy picked this up via Hibs programme, advertising the Isle of Man pre-season soccer tournament. It's got Hibs top cat Alex Miller looking really stoned in the picture with a caption that says, like see, let's do it for the fans. Whenever there's drugs around, that's what they say. We float out of the pub and cross over to the meadows. We start to sing, like say Sinatra, in exaggerated American New York voices. You and I, we're just like a couple of tats, strolling across the meadows, picking up lots of forget-me-nots. There's like, see, two lassies coming down the path towards us. We ken them. It's like, see, that wee Rosanna and Jill. Two pure honey cats. For that posh school, is it Glesby's or Mary Erskine's? They hang about the southern, like, see, for the sounds, the drugs, the experiences. Sick boy outstretches his arms and sort of grabs wee Jill in a bear hug and Rents like she does the same with Rosanna. I'm just left looking at the clouds, like she, Mr. Spare Prick at a Hoor's convention. They're necking away together. This is cruel, man, cruel. Rents breaks away first, but keeps his arm round Rosanna. It's a sort of joke with Rents, like she. Mind you, that wee bird Rents got off with at Donovan, she wasn't that old. What was her name, Diane? Bad cat, Rents,
Sick boy well. Sick boy's like he bundled wee Jill against a tree.
How ye doing, doll? What ye up to? He asks her.
Going to the Southern, she says, a bit stoned.
A little stoned princess, Jewish. No a blemish on her face. Wow, those chicks try to act cool, but they're a bit nervous, he rents and sick boy. They'll let those superstar wasted junkies do anything with them likes. Real cool chicks would slap their pussies like see, and just watch the bastards crumble into a heap. These lassies are playing at it. Gone through an upset your posh man dad phase. Know that Rents would take advantage of this, mind you. I suppose he already has. But sick boy's a different matter. His hands are inside that wee Jill's jeans.
I know about you girls. That's where you hide the drugs.
Simon, I've no go at anything. Simon, Simon!
Sensing a freak out, he sort of lets the lassie go. Every cat laughs nervously, trying to all pretend it was a big game, like see. Then they go.
Maybe see you dolls tonight? Sick boy shouts after them.
Yeah, down the Southern,
Jill shouts, walking backwards.
Sick boy sort of likes slaps his thigh.
Should have taken the wee rides back to the gaff and banged them senseless. We slags were fucking ganting on it.
It was like he says this to himself rather than me and Rents.
Rents starts shouting and pointing. Si, there's a fucking squirrel at your feet. Kill the cunt. Sick boy's nearest to you and tries to entice it to him, but it scampers a bit away, moving really weird, arching its whole body like see. Magic wee silvery grey thing. Ken. Rents picks up a stain and flings it at the squirrel. I feel like sick. My hair misses a beat as it whizzes past the wee gadge. He goes to pick up another, laughing like a maniac, but I stop him. Leave it, man. Squirrels bothering me, cunt, like, see? I hate the way Mark's into hurting animals. It's wrong, man. You can't love yourself if you want to hurt things like that. I mean, what hope is there? The squirrel's like's fucking lovely. He's doing his own thing. He's free. That's maybe what Rents can't stand. The squirrel's free, man. Rents is still laughing as I hud onto him. Two posh-looking wifeys, they gave us the eye as they pass us. They look like, say, disgusted. Rents gets a glint in his eye.
Get a hud of the cunt, he shouts at sick boy, but making sure that the wifeys can hear him. Wrap it in cellophane so it doesn't split when you fuck it.
The squirrel's dancing away for sick boy, but the wifey's turned round and look really repelled by us, like we were shite, Ken. I'm laughing now and all, but still hudding on to Rents.
Where's that fusty minged fucker staring at? Fucking tea room hag,
Rents says loud enough for the wifey's to hear. They turn and increase their pace. Sick boy shouts, fuck off, Gobi Desert Fanny. Then he turns to us and says, I dinna ken what these old hounds are cruising us for. Nobody's gonna fuck them even down here at this time. I'd rather stick it between a couple of B&Q sanding blocks.
Fuck off. You'd shag the cracky dawn if it had hairs on it, Rent says.
I think he felt bad about this as soon as he said it, like see, cause Dawn was a wee bairn that died. Leslie's bairn that died of that, caught death and that, like see, and everybody sort of kens it was like see sick boy that gied her the bairn. All sick boy says though is, fuck off, spunk gullet. You're the city dog pound man here. Every bird I've fucked, and there's been plenty, has been worth fucking. I remember this bird for Stenhouse that sick boy once took him when he was pished. Couldn't he really like to say she was anything special? I suppose every cat's got their sort of Achilles heel, Ken.
Remember that Stenhouse chick, eh? What's her name? Didn't you start talking? You couldn't get a fucking ride in a brothel with your cock sandwiched between American Express and Access cards.
We start slagging each other. Then we're walking for a bit. But I start thinking of wee Dawn, the bairn, and that squirrel, like free and bothering nobody, and they would just kill it, like that, Ken, and for what? It makes us feel really sick and sad and angry. I'm getting away from they people. I turn and walk away. Rents comes after us. Come on, Spud, fuck's sake, man, what is it? Yous were going to kill that squirrel. It's only a fucking squirrel, Spud. They're vermin, he says. He puts his arm round my shoulders. It's maybe nae mair vermin than you or me, like, see. Wait to see what's vermin. They posh wifeys think people like us are vermin, like, see. Does that make it right that they should kill us, I goes. Sorry, Danny. It's only a squirrel. Sorry, mate. I ken how you feel about animals. I just, like... You ken what I mean, Danny. It's like... Fuck. I mean, I'm fucked up, Danny. I dinna ken, beg being that, the gear. I dinna ken what I'm doing with my life. It's all just a mess, Danny. I dinna ken what the fucking score is. Sorry, man. Rents hasn't called us Danny for ages. Now he can't stop calling us it. He looks really upset, like, see. Hey, hang loose, cat boy. It's just like, see, animals and that, like. Don't you worry about that shit. I was just thinking of innocent wee things like Dawn the bear and Ken. You shouldn't hurt things, likes. He likes, he grabs a hoodies and hugs us. You're one of the best, man. Remember that. That's no drink or drugs talking. That's me talking. It's just that you get called all the poofs under the sun if you tell other guys how you feel about them if you're no wrecked. I slaps his back, and it's like, see, I want to tell him the same, but it would sound like, see, I was just saying it 'cause he says it to me first. I says it anyway, though. We hear Sick Boy's voice at our backs. Yous two fucking buffty boys. Either go into the trees and fuck each other, or come and help us find Beggars and Matty. We break our embrace and laugh. We both ken that likes his Sick Boy, for all the cat's desire to rip open every bin liner in toon, is one of the best I know.
Part 4. Blowing It. Chapter 19. Courting Disaster. The magistrate's expression seems to oscillate between pity and loathing as he looks down at me and Spud in the dock.
You stole the books from Watterson's bookshop with the intention of selling them, he states.
Sell fucking books. My fucking arse.
No, I says. Aye, Spud says, at the same time.
We turn around and look at each other. All the time we spent getting our story straight, and it takes the DOS cunt 2 minutes to blow it. The magistrate lets out a sharp exhalation. It isn't a brilliant job, the cunt's got, when you think about it. It must get pretty tiresome dealing with Radgies all day. Still, I bet the poppy's fucking good, and nobody's asking the cunt to do it. He should try to be a wee bit more professional, a bit more pragmatic, rather than showing his annoyance so much.
Mr. Renton, you did not intend to sell the books.
No, Your Honour. They were for reading.
So you read Kierkegaard? Tell us about him, Mr. Renton, the patronising cunt says.
I'm interested in his concepts of subjectivity and truth, and particularly his ideas concerning choice. The notion that genuine choice is made out of doubt and uncertainty, and without recourse to the experience or advice of others.
It could be argued, with some justification, that it's primarily a bourgeois existential philosophy and would therefore seek to undermine collective societal wisdom. However, it's also a liberating philosophy, because when such societal wisdom is negated, the basis for social control over the individual becomes weakened and... But I'm rabbiting a bit here. I cut myself short. They hate a smart cunt. It's easy to talk yourself into a bigger fine or, fuck's sake, a higher sentence. Think deference, Renton. Think deference. The magistrate snorts derisively. As an educated man, I'm sure he kens far more about the great philosophers than a pleb like me. You've got to have fucking brains to be a fucking judge. It's no every cunt that can do that fucking job. I can almost hear Begbie saying that to Sick Boy in the public gallery.
And you, Mr. Murphy, you intended to sell the books, like you sell everything else that you steal, in order to finance your heroin habit?
That's spot on, man. You got it, like say... Spud nodded, his thoughtful expression sliding into confusion.
You, Mr. Murphy, are a habitual thief.
Spud shakes his shoulders, as if to say, it's no my fault.
The reports state that you are still addicted to heroin. You are also addicted to the act of theft, Mr. Murphy. People have to work hard to produce the goods you repeatedly steal. Others have to work hard to earn the money to purchase them. Repeated attempts to get you to cease these petty but persistent crimes have so far proved fruitless. I am therefore going to give you a custodial sentence of 10 months.
Thanks. Nae hassle, like say. The cunt turns to me. Fuck's sakes.
You, Mr. Renton, are a different matter. The reports say that you are also a heroin addict, but have been trying to control your drug problem. You claim that your behaviour is related to depression experienced due to withdrawal from the drug. I am prepared to accept this. I am also prepared to accept your claim that you intended to push Mr. Rhodes away in order to stop him from assaulting you rather than to cause him to fall over. I'm therefore going to suspend a sentence of 6 months on the condition that you continue to seek appropriate treatment for this addiction. Social services will monitor your progress. While I can accept that you had the cannabis in your possession for your own use, I cannot condone the use of an illegal drug. Even though you claim you take it in order to combat the depression you suffered from as the result of heroin withdrawal. For the possession of this controlled drug, you will be fined £100. I suggest that you find other ways to fight depression in the future. Should you, like your friend Daniel Murphy, fail to take the opportunity presented to you and appear before this court again, I shall have no hesitation in recommending a custodial sentence. Do I make myself clear?
Clear as a bell, you fucking docile cunt. I love you, shite for brains. Thank you, Your Honour. I'm only too well aware of the disappointment I've been to my family and friends, and that I am now wasting valuable court time. However, one of the key elements in rehabilitation is the ability to recognise that the problem exists. I have been attending the clinic regularly and am undergoing maintenance therapy, having been prescribed methadone and temazepam. I'm no longer indulging in self-deception. With God's help, I'll beat this disease. Thank you again. The magistrate looks closely at us to see if there's any sign of mockery on my face. No chance it'll show. I'm used to keeping deadpan when winding up Begbie. Deadpan's better than dead. Convinced it's no bullshit, the DOS cunt dismisses the session. I walk to freedom. Poor old Spud gets taken down. A policeman gestures to him to move. Sorry, mate, I says, feeling cuntish. Nae hassle, man. I'll get off the skag in Sockton's Barry for hash. It'll be a piece of pish, like say, he says as he's escorted away by a po-faced lab dick. In the hall outside the court, Mama comes up to us and hugs us. She looks worn out, with black circles under her eyes. "Oh, laddie, laddie, what am I gonna do with you?" she says.
"Silly bastard, that shite'll kill you." My brother Billy shakes his head.
I was going to say something to the cunt. No fucker asked him to come here, and his crass observations are equally unwelcome.
However, Frank Begbie comes out as I was about to speak. "Rents, nice one, my man. Some fucking result, eh? Shame about Spud, but it's better than we fucking expected. He'll no day 10 months, be out in fucking 6 with good behaviour, less even."
Sick boy, looking like an advertising executive, pits his arm around my ma and gives us a reptilian smile.
"This calls for a fucking celebration, deacons," Franco suggests.
Like junkies, we file out after him. Nobody has the motivation to do anything else, and Pish wins by default.
"If you knew what you've done to me and your father..."
My ma looks at us, deadly serious.
"Stupid fucker," Billy sneered, "nicking books of his shops. This cunt was getting my fucking goat. I've been nicking books out of fucking shops for the last 6 years. I've got 4 grand's worth of books at Ma's and in my flat. You think I bought any of them? That's a 4 grand profit on nicking books, dos cunt."
"Oh, Mark, you did me. No, all the books."
Ma looked heartbroken. "But that's me finished now, Ma. I always says that the first time I got caught, that was it over. You're snookered after that. Time to hang up your boots. Finito. End of story." I was serious about this. Ma must have thought so too, because she changes tack.
"And what's your language? You as well," she turned to Billy. "I don't know where you's got that fae, because you never heard it in my house."
Billy raises his eyebrows dubiously at me, and I'm giving him the same gesture back, a rare display of sibling unity between us. Everybody gets a bit pished quickly. Ma embarrasses Billy and me by talking about her periods. Just because she was 47 and still got periods, she had to make sure everybody kent about it.
"I was flooded. Tampons are useless with me. Like trying to stop a burst water main with the evening news,"
she laughed loudly, throwing her head back in that sickening, sluttish, too many Carlsberg specials at the Leith Dockers Club gesture I knew so well. I realised that Ma's been drinking this morning, probably mixing it with the Valleys. "All right, Ma," I says.
"Didn't he tell us your old mother's embarrassing you?"
She grabs my thin cheek in between her thumb and forefinger. "I'm just glad that they've no taken my wee bairn away. He hates being called that. You'll always be my wee bairns, the two of yous. Remember when I used to sing you your favourite song when you were a wee thing in your pushchair?"
I clamped my teeth tightly together as I felt my throat go dry and the blood drain from my face. Surely to fuck, no. "Mama's little baby loves shortening, shortening. Mama's little baby loves shortening bread," she sang tunelessly.
Sick boy gleefully joined in. I wished that I'd gone down instead of that lucky cunt Spud.
"Would Mama's little baby like another pint?" Begbie asked.
"Aye, you might bloody sing as well. You might bloody sing, you fucking bastards."
Spud's ma had come into the pub.
"Really sorry about Danny, Mrs. Murphy," I began. "Sorry, I'll give you sorry. If it wasn't for you and this crowdy bloody rubbish, my Danny wouldn't be in the fucking jail right now."
"Come on now, Colleen Hen, I ken you're upset, but that's no fair," Ma stood up.
"I'll tell you bloody fair, it was this yin,"
she pointed venomously at me.
"This yin got my Danny onto that stuff. Bloody standing up there, Philly's fancy talk in the court, this yin there and that bloody pair."
Sick boy and beggars were included, to my relief, in her anger. Sick boy said nothing, but raised himself slowly in the chair with an "I've never been so insulted in all my life" expression, followed by a sad, patronising shake of his head.
"That's fucking out of order," Begbie snapped ferociously.
There were no sacred cows for that cunt, not even old ones for Leith, whose laddies had just been sent to jail. I never touched that shite, and I've telt Rents and Spot, Mac and Danny, that the Raggie's doing it. Sick, Simon's been clean for fucking months.
Begbie stood up, fueled by his own indignation. He thrashed at his own chest with his fist, as if to stop himself from striking Mrs. Murphy, and screamed in her face, "I was the fucking cunt trying to get him off it!"
Mrs. Murphy turned away and ran out of the pub. The expression on her face got to us. It was one a total defeat. Not only had she lost her son to prison, she'd had her image compromised. I felt for the woman, and resented Franco.
"Aye, she's a bully of the wash use, that yin," Ma commented, but added wistfully, "I can feel for her, though. A laddie gone to jail."
She looked at me, shaking her head.
"For all the hassle, ye wouldn't be without them. How's your wee yin, Frank?"
She turned to Begbie. I cringed to think about how easily people like my ma were taken in by punters like Franco.
"Barry, Mrs. Renton, getting some fucking size.
Call us Cathy, I'll Mrs. Renton yez. Yez make me feel ancient."
"Ye are," I commented. She ignored us completely, and nobody else laughed, no even Billy. Indeed, Begbie and Sick Boy looked at us like disapproving uncles do to a cheeky brat where it isn't their place to chastise. I'm now relegated to the same status as Begbie's bairn.
"Wee laddie, is it, Frank?"
Ma asks her fellow parent.
"Aye, too right. I says to Jew, I says, if it's a lassie, it's gone right back."
I could just see Jew now, with that grey porridge-coloured skin, greasy hair and thin body with a sagging flesh still hanging off it, her face frozen, neutral, deathly, unable to smile or frown, the Valium taking the edge of her nerves as the bairn lets rip with another volley of shudder-inducing screams. She'll love that child, as much as Franco will be indifferent to the pair wee cunt. It'll be a smothering, indulgent, unquestioning, forgiving love, which will ensure that the kid turns out to be just like its daddy. That kid's name was Doon for HM Prison Socton when it was still in June's womb, as sure as the fetus of a rich bastard is eaten bound. While this process is going on, Daddy Franco will be where he is now, the boozer.
"I'll be an old grandma myself soon. God, you wouldn't believe it."
Mama looked at Billy with awe and pride. He simpered proudly. Since he's got his lemon Sharon up the stick, he was my ma and feather's golden boy. Forgotten is the fact that that cunt's brought the lab dicks to the hoose more times than I had ever done. At least I had the decency not to shite on my own doorstep. This now means fuck all. Just because he signed up for the fucking army again. 6 bastard years this time, and bearing some slag. My ma and feyther ought to be asking the cunt what the fuck he's doing with his life, but no. It's all proud smiles.
"If it's a lassie, Billy, get her to take it back," Begbie repeated.
Slurring this time, the bevy was getting to him. Another cunt who's been on the pish since fuck knows when.
"That's the spirit, Franco!"
Sick Boy slapped Begbie on the back, trying to encourage the Raj, to give him mere rope so that he'll come out with another crass Begbie classic or two. We collect all his stupidest, most sexist and violent quotes to use when impersonating him when he's no around. We can make ourselves almost ill with convulsive laughter. The game has an edge, thinking about how he'd respond if he found out. Sick Boy has even started making faces behind his back. One day, either one of us or the baith of us will go too far and be marked by fist, bottle, or subjected to the discipline of the baseball bat. One of Begbie's choice quotes.
We taxied down to Leith. Begbie had begun grumbling about toon prices and had started to pursue a totally irrational advocacy of Leith as an entertainment centre. Billy agreed, wanting to get closer to him, reasoning that his pregnant bird would be more easily appeased if the placatory phone call came from a local pub. Sick Boy would have heartily denounced Leith, had I no done so first. The cunt therefore took great delight in phoning the taxi. We got into a pub at the foot of the walk, one that I've never liked, but one that we always seemed to get stuck in. Fat Malcolm, behind the bar, got us a double voddy on the house.
Heard you got a result. Well done, that man.
I shrugged. A couple of oldish guys were treating Begbie like he was a Hollywood star, listening indulgently to one of his stories that wasn't particularly funny, and this they'd probably heard many times before anyway. Sick Boy bought a round of drinks, making a total meal of it, ostentatiously waving his money about. Billy, lager? Mrs. Renton, Cathy? What's that, gin and bitter lemon? He shouted back at the corner table for the bar. I realised that Begbie, now involved in a conspiratorial tale with an ugly box-headed wanker, the type who ye avoid like the plague, had slipped Sick Boy the dough to get the bevy up. Billy was arguing with Sharon on the phone.
My fucking brar gets off for getting sent down. Nicking books, assaulting a member of the shop staff, possession of drugs. The spawny cunt gets a result. Even my ma's here. I'm entitled to celebrate, fuck's sake.
He must have been desperate if he was reduced to playing the brotherly love card.
There's Planet of the Apes, Sick Boy whispered to us,
nodding over at a guy we drank in the pub. He looked like an extra for that film. As always, he was pished and trying to find company. Unfortunately, his eye caught mine, and he came out to us.
Interested in horses? He asks.
No.
Interested in football?
He slurs. No.
Rugby?
He's sounding desperate now. No, I says. Whether he was on the make or just wanted company was difficult to determine. I don't think the cunt knew hisself. He had lost interest in me anyway, and turned to Sick Boy.
Interested in horses?
No, I hate football and rugby and all. Films I like, though, especially the on Planet of the Apes.
Ever seen that, yin?
I'll lap that up.
Aye, I remember that, yin. Planet of the Apes. Charlton fucking Heston. Roddy Mc... What's the boy's name? Weekend. You ken what I'm talking about. He kens what I'm talking about.
Planet of the Apes turns to us. McDowell.
That's the cunt, he says triumphantly.
He turns to Sick Boy again.
Where's your wee bird today?
Eh? Where's that? Sick Boy asks, totally scoobied.
That wee blonde piece. The one you were in here with the other night.
Oh, aye, her.
Tidy wee bit of fanny. If you didn't mind us saying likes it, nae offence likes, pal.
No, no problem, mate. Yours for 50 baht, and that's no joke. Sick Boy's voice drops.
You serious?
Aye. No kinky stuff, just a straight hump. Cost you 50 baht.
I couldn't believe my ears.
Sick Boy wasn't joking. He was gone, he tried to set up Planet of the Apes with wee Maria Anderson. This junkie has been fucking on and off for a few months. The cunt wanted to pimp her out.
I felt sickened at what he'd come to, what we'd all come to, and started to envy Spud again.
I pull him aside. What's the fucking score?
The score is I'm looking after numero uno. What's your fucking problem? When did you go into social work?
This is fucking different. I didn't ken what the fuck's gone on with you, mate. I really didn't.
So you're Mr. Fucking Squeaky Clean now then, eh?
No, but I didn't fuck over any cunt else.
Get out of my face. Tell us it wasn't you that turned Tommy onto Seeker in that crowd.
His eyes were crystal clear and treacherous, untainted by conscience or compassion. He turned away and moved back out to Planet of the Apes.
I was going to say that Tommy had a choice, wee Maria Disney. All that would have done was precipitate an argument about where choice began and ended. How many shots does it take before the concept of choice becomes obsolete? Wish to fuck I knew. Wish to fuck I knew anything. As if on cue, Tommy came into the pub, followed by